Tonight on Arena, we're at the Galway International Festival once again with Druid Theatre Company, live music from Bernard Butler, and reviews of the best of the festival. And welcome to the second of our Arena broadcasts from the Galway International Arts Festival 2025. Druid Theatre Company celebrates its 50th anniversary this month with a new double bill at the Galway International Arts Festival. Sings Riders to the Sea and Shakespeare's Macbeth are the plays in question. Tragedies both, separated by 300 years in the writing, but full of echoes and contrasts. The cast is led by Marie Mullen and Marty Ray. They play mother and son, Mara and Bartley, in the Sing drama, then husband and wife, the King Killing Leeds in the Shakespeare. Delighted that Gary Hines, Marie Mullen and Marty Ray are all with me in studio this evening. 50 years. Where did that go, Gary?
Nothing to do with me. I've only been there for the last 10. Yeah, it's extraordinary. It really is, yeah. I find it hard to believe.
And I suppose when I think of the two plays that they're currently playing, I kind of guessing it was inevitable that Sing had to be there. He's been so important to Druid from the very beginning.
Absolutely it was. And I mean, while I would have jumped at the chance to do another Playboy, after doing three in 50 years, I felt no. But he did. And Riders then, when we were feeling around the ideas, Riders and Macbeth suddenly, I wouldn't quite say they made sense, but they seemed like something
that could sit together.
That could sit together. And the more and more one saw the connections between them and felt the worlds were the same. And, you know, if you're going to celebrate 50 years, you might as well pick two of the greatest writers in the world.
Yeah, and Sing and Shakespeare certainly would fit into that. There's a few others, but Sing
and Shakespeare. Yeah, there's a few others, but they're in there. They're up there.
And Maria, I'm guessing you said, if I wait 50 years, I'll get to play Lady Macbeth and Maura from Riders to the Sea in the one evening.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary. And it's a great chance to do it. And I'm enjoying it very much. And I think I don't know if I'd have attempted it without the support of Marty and Gary.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting concept, but it does work. Mm. And Shakespeare, of course, the language lends itself to so many interpretations, and so I'm really enjoying it.
And the 50 years of Druid, that must be, you know, for yourself and Gary, and unfortunately we don't have Mick Lally sitting in front of us this evening. And we can all get a little bit sad about that particular reality. Yeah. And others as well, we would have to say. But that 50 years, there must be such an incredible sense of achievement, of pride over what's been done in that five decades.
It's an amazing thing for us to happen. And what's happening to us this year is that our audiences and everybody in Galway are making a big fuss about the two of us and making us feel so welcome and so appreciated. And it's a lovely thing. But from my own point of view, I remember, you know, in the 70s, never thinking that such a thing would happen. I mean, in those days when we were trying to build up, I was imagining, oh God. Well, in the early days we were saying, well, we have to go back and go do something normal, like try and get a teaching job or something like that.
I think in an early production, weren't you? Yes, you were acting, but were you doing costumes as well?
Oh yeah, I did costumes as well, and everybody did. And
she was the finance function in the early Druid. Isn't that a terrifying thought? It was run from the bottom of Marie Mullen's handbag.
Yeah, I had a big handbag with all the receipts in it.
Yeah. So costumes and finance.
And finance, yes. And then somebody lovely came along. We finally got money from the Arts Council where we could employ somebody to do it properly, and that was a great time. For us. And we have lots of memories like that, and I won't bore you with them all right now.
I know, none of the memories would be boring, I'm sure, about that. And Marty, for actors of your generation, Druid Theatre Company was well established when you came anywhere near theatre. What did it mean to you? You know, and you've worked with the company over a period of, I'd say, maybe 10 years or something like that now. I don't know how
12
quite.
Or 13 years now, yeah.
But those to get a first part, to get a first production with Druid,
yeah.
you know, when it was a mere 38 years, if yeah, your 12 yeah. years is right.
Yeah.
How important was that? What did that feel like?
It was huge for me because it was a massive career change for me.
Mm.
I'd been doing a lot of kind of, what would you call them, kind of period dramas and things like that, kind of costume-based stuff, if you like. And the first job that I came on board with Druid was Druid Murphy, which was the three Tom Murphy plays. Mm. And I remember...
He was one of the other great playwrights I was thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I remember people, like, when telling people that I was going to be in it, that they were... laughing, going, you like, and are you going to bring your bow tie with you? But it was a massive change for me, and it was a good one. And yeah. I don't think anybody would have taken the gamble that Gary did. And so it was a massive change for me.
Yeah. Once you got the bow tie off him, then he was grand, Gary, wasn't he?
It didn't feel like a gamble at all. Yeah. I mean, you can, after 50 years or 30 years, you can recognise great acting when you see yeah. it, whether it's wearing boning or bow tie.
Oh,
very
good.
Well
you see, I heard that for a bit of alliteration.
Yes.
So I said I kind of understood the Singh presence in this double bill. Shakespeare, of course, he's one of the world's great playwrights, but there are a few plays of his you could have chosen. Why Macbeth, Gary? What was it about that play?
Well, I think it was the first Shakespeare play for me that I felt I could understand when I read it, because I would have had the usual Irish sense that Shakespeare is not mine or us or ours to do. And it always, I've always loved it, but always been terrified of it. As I think, you know, had a healthy disrespect for one's own talents coming to it. And then it was kind of like, well, if you can't include it in a repertoire of 50 years, then you're really chickening out. And I wanted to do it, and I knew I wanted Marty and Marie. I knew I wanted the involvement of the other members of the ensemble company, and it just made sense all of a sudden.
And it struck me, you know, I would have been very surprised if this company were going to do Shakespeare in received pronunciation. That was kind of never going to happen.
But
it did strike me as I listened to Singh's turn of phrase and facility to use three or four words when the rest of us might only use one, that there were enormous similarities between the style of writing, or the style of language, maybe is the way of putting it, and the style of language of Shakespeare. That must have been striking for you, playing these two roles, Maura and Lady Macbeth, Marie.
Yes, very much so. And as you say, Singh, he's so lyrical, and Shakespeare is a poet. And so it was very helpful when we were doing both to be able to use the language the way both authors wanted us to use them and to learn how to use it properly like that. And it was extraordinary. And also in Macbeth, there's a big sense of supernatural. Mm. And there's a sense in Riders as well of the inevitability of the next world coming to meet us.
Yeah, because we have the fellow going out to sea. We know the minute he goes down towards that pier, he's not coming back.
Yes.
You know, that's it.
And then the witches in Macbeth as well, they're extraordinarily. And we have a lot of that kind of feeling in our own culture, in the Irish culture, the sense of the supernatural and the respect we have for unusual things that happen in our lives, you know. Well, you say it better than me, Gary. It's like...
Marty said something to me a few weeks ago, which has stuck firmly in my head ever since, that in order to act in Shakespeare, you have to be a poet. And
you're cast as a poet,
you're,
I believe.
You're cast as a poet. A
before
poet,
you're any character.
Actor, poet, actors. And exactly the same is true of Singh.
As a director, you might say the line and get out of the way. Don't be doing the acting
As you know, Sean, that's not a very helpful direction to any actor.
No, probably not the best one. But the language does so much of it for you. Had you played Lady Macbeth before at any point?
No,
Marie?
No.
And taking it on, I mean, you're not the usual casting necessarily for this part. Had you any, what were your feelings around that, coming to it at this point in your life and your career?
I got courage to approach it because of the the approach that Gary and and Marty had towards the piece. It was about her relationship with her husband, with Macbeth, and it was immediately we had to sort of look for connections between an older woman and a younger man, that kind of marriage situation. And from the start, we worked on that, as the three of us worked on that in developing how the language would be true in those circumstances. And also the action of the play. It's an action play. It's all about Duncan, and it's all about pushing forward past Duncan.
And a lot of people are going to die in a lot of scenes.
Yes, and you can hang an awful lot on that. Your character is hung on that because of what the character needs to achieve with the language and with the thrust of the play. So we took it from there and just tried to build on that.
What kind of, when you cast in that fashion, Gary, did you have a pre-medit or a pre-thought idea of what kind of dynamics, power dynamics? What were you looking for, though?
No, I was looking for to go into a rehearsal room with two great actors. And the two great actors were Marty and Marie. And after that, I mean, sure, I doubt if the name of a French president has been used as frequently by Drood.
I wonder if that would come in.
Did that strike you during... I would come to you on that one, Marty. You know, did that kind of dynamic, the French president and his wife dynamic, did that start to play into what you yourself and Marie were playing around with in the rehearsal room?
I think it kind of gave you a kind of a nod.
Yeah.
That we were onto something or something. That you could be onto something. That famous footage of them having a tiff on the plane came out the week before we started rehearsals.
Yes.
So it was very fresh in the air. But like, it wasn't a kind of a founding idea. I think, as Gary says, myself and Marie just haven't worked together as part of the ensemble anyways, knew that we wanted to go into it. And, I mean, Macbeth has been done an awful lot of times over the past 400, 500 years or whatever it is. And if you want to come to the story, why not try and stretch it in places where maybe it hasn't been stretched before? Now, this idea has been played out before in productions before. But for us, it was very, very interesting. And we did a production of The House last year by Tom Murphy.
Tom Murphy, yeah.
And that relationship between Christie and Mrs. De Burka was kind of, it was in a very kind of odd area, in a very kind of grey area of, they weren't exactly they weren't mother and son, but they were a de facto mother and son. But also there was a strange other thing that was creeping in when we were playing it. And that's when I think the seeds started to germinate then, that... you could push this, and then so what you end up with is a completely different dynamic than what you're used to watching in the production. And really, if you keep an audience guessing all the time what's going to happen next, if you keep surprising them, then you're going to keep productions more alive and more kind of exciting.
And Gary, you know, I mentioned obviously that there are the linguistic echoes between Shakespeare and Sing. They're there for sure. There are certain things that happen in the production, colours and costumes that echo each other, actions that echo each other. What kind of things, what kind of links and connections did you start to see between Riders to the Sea and Macbeth as you were going through the rehearsal period? Because you wouldn't have all of them at the front of your head when you started the idea.
Well, absolutely, one never does. I mean, it's the process which reveals most things. Mm. But it would have been the use of imagery, the nature imagery used by both writers, the world. I mean, at one point in rehearsals, I said to myself and to others, I actually doubt if the worlds of 19th century Ireland and 10th century Scotland, written by a 16th century writer and a 20th century writer, are in as far apart as we think. And that felt to be true as we rehearsed.
Well, certainly that idea that you were talking about, Marie, of the kind of whatever that other world is, there's a presence of the other world. All of them, that the sea in Riders to the Sea,
that's right,
is a power in and of itself.
Yes.
The witches and that other world are powers in and of themselves in Macbeth.
Yes, and the way the characters have respect or fear or whatever for those elements in it in both plays, there's respect for them. They're never disrespected in either of the plays, you know. And it's part of our culture as well. Yeah, Maryland, you know.
I don't want to give away. There's the opening when, as Riders to the Sea closes, and then the opening of Macbeth. It's a very particular moment that I don't want to give away because people will see it when they get there. But for you, Marty, playing Bartley in Riders to the Sea and then Macbeth, did you start to make connections between those characters, or was it on a higher scale than that? You know that you were saying in Shakespeare I'm playing a poet.
Yeah.
First, before I'm playing any character. What kind of connections did you start to see?
Well, definitely the language and how they speak. But also what Maria's just talked about there, about a kind of a healthy respect for the greater forces, but then also knowing when you go against them to expect what's going to come down the line. Are you prepared to accept that? Or do you have no choice?
Because Bartley goes to sea.
Yeah, and he
you
has no
say
choice.
That's a tragic flaw.
But he has no choice. He has to keep the family going. Whereas Macbeth is forced to make that decision, or is helped along to make that decision for his, in response to an ambition. But in the early days, we talked about... we made up a term, like sing spear, where actually to speak Shakespeare and sing is very, they're very, very similar. And Shakespeare's poetry comes from the pentameter, so it goes bum 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 bum, which is the human heartbeat. And sing writes like the sea. You can hear the ebb.
You can hear the swish of the sea literally
Absolutely.
Coming in and out. Can't you
can, and that's him on that island. So his ear is so attached to his landscape. Shakespeare's ear is completely attached to the humanity. Yeah. That the two things actually are more linked than I think I ever thought.
Just to go back to where we started then, Marie, 50 years. You mean, I know there are probably a million of them that stand out. And I must say the programme has this 50-year timeline, which is amazing to read, in fact, and remind ourselves of some of the things. What really stands out for you in terms of even a production?
And productions is mostly the survival of the company. And that is because of the new blood, because the ensemble, because getting people of Marty's calibre to come and develop Druid. That is the big thing. But the, one of the things that I remember personally is Siobhan McKenna.
Ah, right, Bandy Gongara. Yeah. And you played then?
I played her granddaughter. At that time, and working with Tom and Gary on this new script, which he wrote for her, and that was a great experience.
Well, characterised by the husband of Marie Mullen, Sean McGinley. Coming down the lane to pick her up after the first rehearsal and asking, how is the new girl getting on? Referring to Siobhan.
Gary, I do want to finish, and I know a lot of listeners will be aware that you lost your wife this year, and they'll want me on their behalf to express sympathy to you on that. But the fact that this is Sings Riders to the Sea, and of course Martha O'Neill, your wife's company, had made a film of that.
Yeah.
That must be both touching and I can see probably deeply moving for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, sort of in recognising her, recognising also the fact that she had made her own contribution to Druid in preserving the record on more than one occasion of the making of and the Druid productions. It made me feel very proud.
And why wouldn't you? And may she rest in peace. Thank you very much to all three of you for being with us on this evening's programme. Druid's double bill of Riders to the Sea and Macbeth is now open. It runs through until July the 26th as part of a sold-out run, I'm told, at the Galway International Arts Festival. You can always check for returns.
Yeah,
people turn, you know, on the day suddenly can't go. It's always worth checking it out. It will be moving to the Gaiety Theatre as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival in September and October. But seeing it, I suppose, in its Galway home has a very special quality to it. Marty Ray, Marie Mullen, Gary Hines, thank you very much.
Thank you
so much.
And welcome back to Arena, coming to you from the Galway International Arts Festival on this Friday evening. Few guitarists have left as indelible a mark on British music as Bernard Butler, from his groundbreaking work with Suede during the Britpop era to his soulful collaborations and introspective solo albums. Butler has continually evolved while staying true to his artistic core. Outside of his work with Suede, he has worked closely with David McAlmont, Duffy, and enjoyed a host of collaborations with Sophie Ellis-Baxter, Texas, and Brian Ferry, to name but a few. He's with me in the Galway studio this evening, and he's going to start with a song called People Move On.
Go play safe, fly low. It's for the sake of all that you've known. Throw your staff down from the citadel, run away. So you won't laugh at what you've said. He's got a princess to impress, and I've got no bow, no plan, no place to go. I've just got the ring. People move on. Move along. Your people move on. Yeah, just move along. For all of the boys that he meets, oh, and his hair, well, it curls right down to his feet. Oh, he gives me the creeps. Yeah, he'll take the wind right from your sails. He's quite Jesus with his hands on the kells. Words, well, they usually fail to move me in any way. People move on. I move along. People move on. Just gotta keep moving on. So go play safe. Oh, fly low. It's for the sake of all that you've known. Throw a star down from the citadel. Or run away.
People Move On, performed live in our Galway studios for us this evening by Bernard Butler. It's amazing listening, Bernard, to the lyrics of that song at this point in time. Yeah, go on, play safe, lie low, and you know, take it easy. Don't ever take a risk in your life is basically what that song is saying.
Yeah, it's a bit of a positive and a negative, really, isn't it? It's kind of where we want to be, and also it sort of holds us back as well.
But that is probably what you have done all your artistic life, which is refused to play safe and refused to lie low.
Yeah, exactly. And also it's about making your own decisions, really, and your own challenges, and probably being stubborn enough to not be pushed in a certain direction by anybody else. But then you can choose to put the brakes on or push yourself as you do. And yeah, I mean, I like it's music, you know, I'm not at war, you know, I mean, I feel like if you can't push yourself and make challenges as a musician, then you aren't a musician.
I guess though, over the years, I mean, it's easy to read that from 1998, I think was when the first one, the solo album, that was the title of the solo album as well. You know, it's easy to read all the suede stuff into that. Oh, it's time for me to move on, be my own musician. But I guess here we are 20 plus nearly 30 years on at this stage from the time of that song. Has it meant very different things at different points along the way?
Yeah, I think all songs do. You know, I think whenever you hear the songwriter say, oh, this is it's about this, exactly. I never don't believe a songwriter ever, because you write songs and they're in the moment, you know, and the whole point is they're interpreted. And I look back at my own songs and I think, I get that. Now I know what that's. Or now I can see that in relation to that thing that happened last year or the year before or something, you know. So I'm constantly just, when I'm, I love the songs I like to sing live are the ones where I'm reading myself into it at that point, you know, that moment when I'm singing it, not about when I recorded it or wrote it, you know. And that's really important when you're singing, when you're performing in the present day.
We're speaking to you, of course, in the west of Ireland. You have huge associations, and you've spoken to me before about your associations with the east of Ireland and O'Leary and coming here as a kid. When you travel out west, as you are here for the Galway International Arts Festival, and I know you're heading out on a holiday when all of that is done, and have a bit of time out, Do you have an affiliation with this side of the country as much as you have with the eastern side?
Well, I mean, Galway, I remember the last time I was really in Galway was with Bert Jansch. I came with Bert Jansch, actually, God bless him, in about 2002. I'm not sure. And it was for the Galway Festival, I think, then. Yeah. And I was out and we played a show then. That was a great time. And I remember going out to the Aran Islands and all those kind of stuff, travelling afterwards. So, I mean, Kerry really is a place which I went to when I was a kid. We weren't from Kerry, but because we were landed for our summer holidays in Dublin, in Dunleary, which wasn't the most glamorous, my granny's house, you know, it wasn't the most glamorous place.
So it didn't have the mountains and the lakes of Kerry, let's put it that way.
So we had friends who had a little cottage on Valentia Island. And so we always got whisked off for a week to Valentia Island, which was just paradise, you know, it's fantasy land down there. And so I really remember that really well. And then when I met Jessie Buckley, when we spoke last, you know, and I remember her saying to me the first thing, she said, oh, I'm in Ireland. And I said, I guess that. Where are you in Ireland? She said, I'm in Kerry. You wouldn't have heard of it. And I said, oh, no, try me, you know. And she zoned it into places, Killarney and Carsevine and all these places.
That meant something to you.
I know all these places.
Yeah, that, of course, was for that collaboration, the album that you made with Jessie Buckley, which was quite extraordinary. I know we spoke about it quite a lot whenever that was, about two or three years back at this point in time. But Jessie, I suppose, is a perfect example of when you're choosing a collaborator, or when a collaboration becomes a possibility, what are you looking for? Because there's quite a range of people that you've worked with.
You know, people.
It's the person.
It's really, and I don't really choose, to be honest. I don't get, people always say that as if I'm kind of thumbing through my discography.
Potential collaborators.
I'll take them. No, I get asked, I'm really lucky I get asked to do stuff, you know. Jesse came along at a time when I decided I'm not doing this anymore, I'm doing my own thing, you know, and Jesse really intrigued me because she was an actor, and I just sort of like, what do you want with this? You know, it's sort of quite interesting. And I saw something of her, I watched a little clip of her, and I just thought there was something in her I could tell in the personality, even watching her on TV, that I just was intrigued by, you know. And then when we met, it was like that as well, all the way. We just had all this stuff in common, and as a personality, I loved her, you know. I loved being around her.
And of course, Kerry and the Blasket Islands are very present in the second song that you're, sure, that you're going to sing for us. But before we do that, what about choosing guitars? I was delighted to see this evening you came in. I thought, how many guitars will he have with him? Two songs, two guitars. I'm going to get two treats.
Yeah, well, I carry two guitars, you know.
Is it two all the time, or do you ever carry more?
Yeah, it depends what I'm doing. But at the moment, I'm doing one show, and I can manage on two guitars, you know. I'm travelling around Ireland. I can't be bringing guitars in and out of hotels everywhere.
Yeah. 20 years of growing, obviously a reference to Maoirse O'Sullivan, Fáil Blaenig Foss, 20 years of growing, Maoirse O'Sullivan, that mm-hmm. book. That meant a lot to you, I think, in this, and it's present in this song.
Yeah, I mean, we went to, with my wife and my family, you know, years ago, maybe 20 years ago, we went down to Dingle and we stayed in Dingle, and, you know, me kind of returning to Kerry, and we went to the fantastic museum right at the end of Dingle, devoted to the Dingle and the Blaskets, and really, really amazing place. And I remember it was my wife actually just picked up this book and said, isn't that beautiful, the title, and it has the kind of little ode in it, 20 years growing, 20 years of blooming, 20 years stooping, 20 years of decaying. And we just fell in love with that straight away, and we bought the book, and it just sat there, and I just always knew it would be a song. And I remember being with Jesse, and what we did with Jesse all the time is we grabbed books off the shelf that we had read or not read, and we'd say, what's this? And I kind of forced this one on her, and it was just really obvious that she picked this, and we were both like, this is going to be a song. I mean, it's not about the Blaskets, obviously, but it's really about her brother, actually. A lot to do with her brother, who was a mountain climber. It's a lot about my daughter at the time, who was during COVID, and her growing up as a teenager and, you know, trying to break out, all that stuff. So it's all about, it's a coming of age kind of song.
And I guess, and in 10 years' time, it'll be about something else.
Exactly, it will be, travels with us.
I'll let you go and get the second guitar, and I'll let you give it to us then. Second performance, live on Arena this evening from the Galway International Arts Festival. Bernard Butler with 20 Years a Growing.
Gonna climb a mountain top just so I can look out far to sea. I'm gonna walk along the highest trapeze just to feel the wind when it blows round my feet. I never saw myself as a common man. Say farewell to this crooked land. I've been hanging on to bigger plans with hooks in the wall. Don't ask me where I've gone. I won't be back before the dawn. I've been hanging on since I was born to hooks in the wall. Find a mountain back for a horn. Got a hand like a moth or a rider of the storm. I'm gonna laugh at the boys perch like pigeons on a wall. I'm gonna wake up and find myself in San Francisco. Thank you. were all it was in the flower of our youth. Carefree and singular, we're misunderstood. The road is wide open, there's nothing to lose. Only the dust on the soles of our shoes. Only the dust on the soles of our shoes. Only the dust on the soles.
Bernard Butler with 20 Years a Growing. He played the Rushing Dove in Galway last night as part of this year's Galway International Arts Festival. And welcome back to the final part of this arena special from the Galway International Arts Festival. With me now are our two reviewers, Judy Murphy and Mary McGill, been to see a number of shows for us, in fact. We were talking to Gary Hines, Marie Mullen and Marty Ray earlier on about Druid being 50 years old and the current double bill. Let's stick with that just for the time being. Before we get to the plays themselves, Judy, 50 years of Druid, it is such an important milestone. How important is the fact that the company has been based in the west of Ireland, in Galway, for 50 years, not just for them, but for the theatre-going public here?
Well, I think Druid was a game-changer. There's no doubt but Druid was a game-changer. When they set up, there was really nothing. There was nothing outside of Dublin. You had the fit-ups coming in, you had travelling theatre and you had amateur theatre and all very fine. But this was a whole new level.
Yeah.
And at the 50th birthday party, which was on a couple of weeks ago, Marie Mullen spoke, Gary spoke obviously, but Marie spoke, and she said she remembered a guy when they were doing up the warehouse that McDonald's had given them after Gary had inveigled it out of McDonald's, that some guy came by on a bicycle and he stopped outside the door and he dropped in a tenner. And that was the sense of ownership from the very beginning that people had. He contributed towards their building.
This is for the company.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, they have changed the face of theatre. They've done the Murphy plays, they've done the Freel plays, they brought McDonagh to us. They have just done so much. More recently, Sonia Kelly.
Yeah.
I mean, just super writers.
You've never stood still. And it's easy to take them for granted in that respect, I'm sure, Mary, because you possibly never knew a time when there was no Druid.
I never knew a time when there was no Druid. And if you think about that 50 years in terms of Ireland and the West and how much transformation has taken place, and Druid have been a constant, you know, as somebody who's a millennial, they've always been there. And they've always been a mark of brilliance. if I might use that word. They are that benchmark.
The gold standard.
Yes,
yeah,
they
for
are.
Sure. Okay, so let's go to the double bill that they're currently presenting, Riders to the Sea by Singh and Shakespeare's Macbeth. As I said to Gary earlier on, no surprise that Singh was in there. She's always wanted to do Shakespeare's Macbeth. How well do those two plays sit together in a Druid repertoire, Judy?
For me, I didn't. I didn't. I felt after seeing Macbeth, you saw Riders to the Sea first, and it is what it is, and very good performances and all that. But I felt after seeing Macbeth, it diminished almost the experience of Riders to the Sea, because Macbeth is such a powerful, powerful production. It's an extraordinary production. I just felt that it was like having a starter and a main course, and the starter really, you had it forgotten almost.
Okay, I think you enjoyed your starter and that it enhanced your main course, Mary.
It certainly did. For me, I love the juxtaposition of these two pieces because there's such a kind of a strong, well, Druid do a great job of drawing out symbolism between the two, first and foremost, but there is a real strong kind of superstitious element to both that really comes across.
Yeah, Marie Mullen was talking about that quite a bit when she was chatting earlier.
Yes, so when you see them side by side, so you have the, obviously in Riders to the Sea, you have this foretelling of death, you have prophecy, you have a kind of a reverence but also deep fear of a force bigger than you being the sea, right? So the superstition is rooted in superstition but also in something that's really real. Mm. And so too in Macbeth, it is superstition that undoes so many of the characters in that play, but it's also the motivating force. The Weird Sisters, for example, I have to commend them. We have seen the Weird Sisters a million times, but not like this.
Yeah.
I found them so unsettling. Judy, I don't know if you did.
They were amazing. They were terrifying.
Terrifying.
They were terrifying.
Because you couldn't see the faces at all.
The cowls and the...
And this was also carried through in Riders to the Sea, because we had these very scary, creepy, hooded fishermen whose faces we couldn't see.
I actually thought that symbolism was forced, and I thought the crucifix in both plays and the
crucifix in the background.
I liked that, and there was a little miniature rocking horse that was in Riders to the Sea, very subtly placed on a shelf, that featured much more large in Macbeth.
Yeah.
But I think the superstition and the soothsaying in Macbeth is of a different kind, and the forces that you're dealing with in Macbeth are human forces, really, and the evil is human evil.
You've mentioned there, Judy, that your main course was very enjoyable. So, the main course being Macbeth. What did you enjoy? What kind of Macbeth did you get from Druid, and why did it work so well for you?
It was visceral, is the word. That it was visceral, it was powerful. It was absolutely, they didn't transport it to contemporary times, and the way it was told, it was very medieval. The costumes were quite medieval, the swords, the daggers. But at the same time, you kept getting the resonance. This is a modern play. This is a play that speaks to us. The people killing each other have to face each other head on or delegate it to someone. It's a dirty business.
Yeah.
But the power, the need for power, what you'll do to keep power, all of that.
Yeah. And it was Gary Hines herself who mentioned President Macron and his wife when we talked about the casting of Marie Mullen and Marty Ray here. How did that pairing work for you, Mary?
I found it fantastic. I mean, I can still see Marty Ray as Macbeth slithering like a snake across the soil-lined floor of the stage. These are two really, that's a great word, Julia. That's exactly how I describe it. These are two deeply, embodied, raw performances. They work really well. Now, Marie Mullen is astonishing because we've just seen her as a broken woman in Riders to the Sea.
Yeah, she plays the mother there and the wife, obviously, Lady Macbeth in Shakespeare.
Yeah, a scheming Lady Macbeth who then, subsequently falls apart, is undone by her ambition. So two striking performances. I thought they did incredibly well in those roles.
Other standout performances for you and then stars, Judy?
I absolutely like that, Marie, and the age difference kind of worked. Because she's bossing him and she's bullying him almost. And that kind of forceful thing. I thought Liam Hesson, and I thought as well that, Garrick Lumbert.
Reality is they all play loads of parts as well. Yeah, there's a big
Rory
ensemble
Nolan
cast.
And as Banquo.
Banquo,
because his performance was so grounded and so solid. as the ghost, even, and all of that, compared to Macbeth, who is slithering, as you see, Mary.
I always had a desire to play Banquo rather than Macbeth.
Yeah.
I was going to play one of those characters.
Well, things turn on his appearance.
Yeah.
Stars from you on this one.
I would give it 5.
A solid 5, and from you.
Big shout out to Marie Mullen. Absolutely incredible, and it's 5 stars.
So a double 5-star review there. Riders to See Macbeth runs at the McLally Theatre through until July the 26th. Definitely get a ticket, I do believe, for that. It transfers to the Gaiety Theatre as part of Dublin Theatre Festival from the 25th of September through until the 5th of October. Something that you've been to see, very brief mention, we had both Rosie McCarthy Adair, who's the singer that you hear in the Moonfish production, Why the Moon Travels Now. This is a real celebration of traveller culture by 3 traveller women telling their own stories, wonderful stories that they tell here, Judy.
Wonderful stories. I went with today at lunchtime and I just thought, like, this really... I love Moonfish. I always love what Moonfish do because they take traditional things and they give them a contemporary twist. Now, this, they've taken a traditional and they've kept it very traditional. These are stories told by these 3 women, interspersed by their own stories and their own lives and their own memories.
And they're baking bread the whole way through, aren't they?
They're baking bread. They're making what they call weed, which is actually cups of tea.
Yeah.
And they mix cant and regular, our speech, we'll say.
English language.
Just the whole thing. And what we learn, Why the Moon Travels, which is the title of one of Orjune's book on which this piece is based. We learn how spiders came to be. We learn where the first yew tree came from. And we learn all these really, why the grey crows are grey crows. Stuff that is part of their heritage that actually people in settled communities, we don't know these stories.
And they're great stories that I must I got a chance to read the stories on the page.
And the presentation of it by the Necronis, the line, the cartoons, the little...
They're these shadow puppets they use.
Shadow puppets. They're beautiful.
So this sounds like another 5-star, and I think it's another one that's... Well, I shouldn't presume.
There's a matinee tomorrow, on tonight, matinee tomorrow, and it finishes tomorrow night, and it's in the Bank of Ireland Theatre, which is very small, but people today got returns.
All right. So, I am always a great believer. Yeah. Check out the returns. You might just get it, and it's great for when they think they've a full house and then somebody doesn't turn up.
Yeah.
That's very disappointing for the performers.
It is.
You know.
Yeah.
So do
lovely
check for returns.
Great response.
All right.
Today.
Did you say stars?
I didn't say stars. I'd give it 4.
Why the Moon Travels is the Bank of Ireland Theatre until the 19th of July. Burning Down the House is what you went to see, which is the David Mack exhibition, which is, where is it actually showing? What's the title of that particular venue?
It's the Festival Gallery.
The Festival Gallery, thank you.
Yeah, just off Shop Street, so anybody can pop in.
Yeah, you can walk down the street and it's just in there. It's not a big deal to get to it.
Yeah, it's such a great space. Every year, I think everyone in Galway goes, why can't we keep it? But we can't, but it's here for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was in there this morning and you think it's a great venue, but I've only ever been here when it is a venue, so I presume it's there all year round.
No, unfortunately, if only. But this year we're welcoming David Mack back again. I have to say, I found this very on the nose and very timely, given the situation that we find ourselves in, the height of the tourist season. Obviously, we have issues with housing here in Ireland, and when you enter the gallery first, you see this lovely framed portrait of a country scene. You've got, your sheepdogs, your sheep, your trees, your stream and so on. But in the background, as you see when you take a step closer, the cottage is exploding and there's a fireball bursting out of it through the thatch.
Television up somewhere.
Television flying through the air, all of these lovely modern appliances. And the name of this print is The Second Homeowner's Nightmare. So very on the nose. We know exactly where we are now.
The other thing that struck me is, because that's very much, there's an environmental aspect to that, but then you walk into the second room and it's full of these, the classic David Mack hangers.
Yes.
sculptures made from hangers. And you think, how did he do that? Never mind how effective they are.
Yes. And when you go in and you look at those sculptures made from hangers, you encounter people like literally trying to get up close to figure out how has he done this? Because the effect, even when you take a picture of them, they look pixelated almost. It does something to your eyes.
And you want to be careful now about taking pictures
without asking
permission.
Absolutely. And thank you for pointing that out, Sean. But the main installation here, which is Burning Down the House, is a life-size interpretation of that image I was telling you about, that print. And people are just walking around it with their jaws open. They were literally watering the grass and plants around it when I was in there. Yeah. It's all real, part of it.
Yeah, the grass is amazing. Yes.
Somebody threw a half glass of wine into the grass at the opening on Sunday evening.
No,
someone will only help it grow.
Indeed.
What a waste of a half glass of wine. burning down the house. And this sounds stars. If I'm asking you for stars, I'm not quite sure why.
I'm look at, if you want to look at something spectacular and maybe or maybe not take a photograph, probably don't. Five stars, Sean. Very good.
Burning down the house at the Festival Gallery through until the 27th of July. Let me do a couple of swift mentions as we go along. Vernon God, Little Galway Youth Theatre, Mary.
Absolutely fantastic. We're here talking about 50 years of Druid because a bunch of young people took an initiative that has paid off incredibly. This is a young cast. They are brilliant. This
is an adaptation of DBC Pierre's Booker Prize winning novel.
Yes. A very brilliant, outrageous satire that, you know, lives on the page. This is a fantastic script, but it's very, you know, hard to get right because it's very frantic. That there are lots of beats that you have to hit. This cast do an incredible job.
Nuns Island Theatre. Yes. It's running. Is it running through to the end or no, finish?
27th.
27th, right through to the end.
Yeah.
Beckett Sacraig, this is from Tavyark Nagalyeva and company SJ Sarah Jane Scaife. They had done Happy Days, what was Lay in the Sunna, as it was called, Osgaeliga. So here we have three pieces together. Beckett Sacraig, Gutten the Mon, monologues. What three plays are we talking about, Judy?
We're talking about four short plays. So they have Fizzles 4, which is from his prose writing, Footfalls, Not I, and Rockabye.
Yeah.
And they've been translated, monologues translated into Irish by Micheál Ochanila, who also did the Leigh an the Sunna.
And Beckett Osgaeliga, has it got a quality that makes it different?
I don't know. When I heard, I was at Leigh an the Sunna and I thought it was like it had been.
But was it? It was on.
It was on
Inishir. But it's on an island. It's already
But the language was like it had been written in Irish. The delivery, I didn't find that with this. I actually wasn't wild about this.
All right. Well, it's out on Tavyark. It runs through just until tomorrow, the 19th. Dimanche, the Belgian theatre company in the town hall. I think you were most wild about this one, Judy.
Most extraordinary. Again, it deals with climate change, but it does it in a way that makes you laugh, makes you gasp. They do the most extraordinary. Three people, two puppeteers, and what they do with that and the music and the soundscape and the visuals, it's amazing.
I'm dying to see it. I'm going to see it tomorrow in the matinee, and Dimanche is at the Town Hall Theatre until tomorrow. There's a show tomorrow night as well. I think hard for tickets again, but check out for returns. I'll give the website at the very end. Both of you went to see Scorched Earth, which is showing up in the Black Box. So this is Luke Murphy and his... It's called dance theatre. I don't think that begins to express the kind of total theatre that Luke Murphy gives us.
I think total theatre is exactly what it is, Sean, because we get that narrative storytelling within those, you know, elements of dance as well. I adored this. It combines a kind of a classic Irish theme of a land dispute gone horribly wrong.
Such a John B. Keane, the feel of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. But also really clever elements of our modern fascination with true crime. And if you're wondering how that works through dance, I urge you to go and see the show because it's so well done.
So you've danced, you've the true crime, because the actors, the dancers, movers, performers, whatever we call them, they speak. There's lots of text in it as well.
Lots
there's
of,
TV,
there is.
TV's
there,
up the back. It's
this
multimedia,
kind of
really,
newspaper
Judy.
Newspaper cuttings showing all the various land disputes that have happened down through the years, from Mayo to Leitrim to Clare to everywhere. And it just encapsulates all of that. And as Mary says, the modern crime scene and crime drama, and there's a CSI kind of room in it that transforms into a radio studio. It's really well done.
All right. So what are you saying, stars?
I'm going to go with five stars again. It's been a great year.
You're having a good time. And
I'm going to be less generous. I thought the last scene was too long, so I'm giving it 4.5.
4.5. Shorten the last scene, you get the half back. Thanks to both of you, and I'm sure you'll be very busy next week with further shows that are happening at the Galway International Arts Festival. For everything that we've been speaking about, you can find out the details on giaf.ie. But that is it from our shows from Galway. The festival continues through until next Sunday, the 27th, and all of the details on that website, giaf.ie. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator. The researchers for this evening's programme were Paula Shields and Liam Murphy. Our thanks to John Doyle on sound supervision here in Galway, not just for his work on sound, but for looking after us here in the studios over the past couple of days. And both programmes from Galway, both last night and tonight, were produced by Reg Luby. Back with you tomorrow, or not tomorrow, I'm back with you on Monday at 7 o'clock here on RT Radio 1. John Creedon will be with you after the news.